This is the October 3 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden of AgriView. She's out of Morton, Illinois. Brian Stark is with us from the Andersons from right here in Mansfield, Illinois, Champaign County. And Arlen Suderman joins us from StoneX. He's in Kansas City, Missouri. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen to us at willag.org, willag.org. A couple of things to put in the save the date side of your calendars while you're in the combines this week. Try to remember the middle of December, but starting on the 13th, that's a Friday, the Farm Assets Conference takes place on campus at the University of Illinois at the I Hotel. And then the following week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, the Ag Econ team, the Farm Doc team, and myself will be on the road. We'll be in Mount Vernon on Monday, East Peoria, and Tuesday, and on Wednesday, we will be in DeKalb. If you're used to that, that's a day earlier in the week for each of them than it normally is. So we're traveling the first 3 days of the week instead of the middle of the week because we're in December again. Those have moved from January to December. So the IPA series on the road and the Farm Assets Conference all taking place in the month of December. Now let's turn our attention to our Commodity Week panelists and get some items that we should discuss this week. Ellen Dearden from AgriView, what's on your list?
I'd like to talk about the U.S. dollar. Last week, it was about at par, if you look at the dollar index. But it's been up ever since on, I guess, a safe haven place, given the Middle East upset. And a strong dollar is not good for U.S. exports.
Brian Stark of the Andersons.
I think the biggest thing, Todd, is we get deeper into harvest and the early reports of yields being above expectations. I think just trying to plan out logistically what the next move marketing-wise with the excess bushels that producers may not be able to store on farm and how we best handle the cash grain side here over the next 30 to 45 days.
And finally, Arlen Suderman at StoneX.
Yeah, looking at the international side, really, it's what risks do we see from the Middle East conflict for fuel prices and fertilizer prices going forward, and also the Russian drought and how that continues to linger, and does that hold some opportunities to support wheat and corn prices as we get later in the year?
Okay, so I think we'll start with what yields look like. I imagine we should begin with you, Arlen, as StoneX has released some updated numbers for the crop production report in the month of October and expectations from USDA, although I'm not certain those are both related, but kind of where you think the numbers might be. What do you see for yields, and how did they change month to month?
Yeah, we ask our customers what the yields are going, what they would best project final yields to be in their trade territory. And as they have their agronomists in the field and as they talk to farmers, and what's their best guess of the final yield. So we're not estimating the next USDA, but we are estimating basically final. And our corn yield went up to 184 bushels per acre. That's up from 182.9 in September and just above USDA 183.6. So big crops keep getting bigger, but not significantly so. Soybeans was a little bit of a surprise to me as I was seeing so much variability in the soybean yields across the Midwest that I thought we might creep it a little bit lower, but instead it went higher to 53.5 bushels per acre. That's up a half bushel from last month and up about 3/10 of a bushel from USDA in September. So now we'll see where USDA comes out next week.
So, Brian Stark, when you listen to those numbers, do they make sense with what you have heard so far? And do you think there's much of a difference in the yield getting bigger over time as it's related to the April and the May and the June planted crop?
Yeah, I think the one thing I'll highlight to begin with is we've noticed, interestingly enough, as long as I've been in the grain business and also tied to farming myself, that the April planted corn crop in East Central Illinois versus some of the early May surprisingly has some yield drag to it, 10 to 15%. I think that's just a small portion, because if you remember back, Todd, to the spring, we were, majority of our crop was planted in May, given some of the wet conditions. So I certainly don't think that the trend is comparable to where we saw some of the April yields, but certainly we've been accustomed to seeing better yields the earlier we plant. I don't see as much variation in the bean site, but I would say comparably, as we've gotten into it, that, you know, common corn yields in East Central Illinois have been running around 250 to 260 bushel per acre. That's on the, tends to be on the low end. West Central Indiana, I would say 225 to 230, and you get into some 240 to 250, which historically is very good for them. Bean wise, you know, consistently in the mid 70s to some places in Champaign County hitting 90 bushel beans. And I think that's kind of what I want to hone in on, because a lot of the frustration farmers have had is that we've been in a downtrending market based on those bigger crops getting bigger. And I think what it comes back to is it's a revenue game. And so as yields, if you're in those areas that maybe exceed your expectations, I think really looking at the current market structure and trying to figure out what makes the most sense from a revenue perspective, rather than trying to price forecast. I'll use beans as an example. Given some of the dryness that we've seen in South America, we've kind of got a short covering rally, and we've kind of run up against the 100-day moving average, which is just shy of 1075. And I think that's a good place, given some of the yields we've been hearing, in our opinion, even with a weaker basis, to maybe be selling the cash and looking at a different way of staying long the commodity, if that's what they choose to do, on some of these excess bushels they can't store.
Just to come back to the beginning of the conversation we had just now here, you're telling me that there is a yield drag in the April versus the May corn, so that a 250, 260 yield that you're talking about is smaller than what the May corn is actually going to yield?
Yeah, I think, no, I would say the 250 to 260 is probably comparable to May, and even higher than that. I would say that the April planted corn has been, what we've heard, closer to 240. So I think that's where I should have clarified that when I was starting. And I average, because the majority of the corn that was planted in our draw territory here was in May, most of the yields on average are in that 250 to 260 range. But keep in mind, we're only 10 to 15% into harvest. So I think, you know, the FC Stone survey, I think, is probably right on the corn side. I'm with Arlen that I was a little surprised that they went up, because a lot of people have been talking about the dryness the last 4 to 6 weeks in some of the eastern part of the Corn Belt to finish the bean crop, and maybe some smaller seed size, but we're not seeing that yet. And again, first 10, 15, 20% of bean harvest has given us, you know, some sort of a small trend that yields are still very good, even with the late season dryness.
Who would have thought that a 240 corn would be referred to as yield drag? That is quite something. Ellen Dearden in the Morton, Illinois area near Peoria. What are yields like today?
First of all, the focus has really been on bean harvest. There's very little corn taken out, maybe 10% corn has been taken out, but there was not a lot of April planted corn in this area. On the bean side of things, they were probably close to 50% done on beans. And I would say you're starting to see some elevators plugged up with beans. River isn't taking beans in Peoria, but Havana is. The bean yields are good. When I say they're good, I heard my first over 90 bushel yield probably 10 days ago, and since then I've heard more than two hands full. I consider that's really pretty outstanding. I had an interesting conversation with a farmer today who said that he had hail damage in a bean field and got a little bit over $100 an acre on his hail damage. And he thought that he was still above his APH. So when Brian made his comment about revenue of the total the total revenue and take a look at that. I think sometimes we need to consider some of those bonus payments, like a hail damage payment, too.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you are thinking, Alan Dearden, at this stage, as it's related to revenue, because it is always bushels times price and a higher average yield times a lower average price can still give you a lot of revenue or a great deal of revenue. What are you telling producers to do?
I'm telling producers on the bean side of things to be active sellers. I think we are in the midst of probably a declining basis because there will not be storage space for all the beans that are coming to town. I think very few beans have been sold in West Central Illinois and even in eastern part of Iowa. And I think that beans need to be sold really anytime we can see above 1060 on the November futures. I think they have to be sold. It's much easier to generate cash for a cash flow standpoint into the end of the year with selling beans than it is with corn.
And your expectation, I don't know for which direction in the futures market, but the basis will widen even if we maintain a fairly stable marketplace for the futures for soybeans.
And I actually think the bean market is going to work lower here over the next several weeks and maybe well into Thanksgiving. Corn side of things, we may not see that kind of a big downside movement in the futures. It may be a basis move, which, you know, depending on your trade area, whether the elevators are going to be just jam full. I have not seen elevators with running dryers yet. So I think that's kind of an interesting thing. But again, just a little bit toe in the water on corn harvest in this local area.
Brian Stark, you wanted to talk about logistics. I suppose we've worked our way towards that at this point. What are your primary issues of concern?
I think the biggest thing is what Ellen highlighted on. I think the lack of an export program in a big way, like we're accustomed to seeing on the bean side down to the Gulf with China, I think certainly will have impact all the way back to the interior. Domestic use demand is still strong, but not enough to absorb what may want to come to town. And I think logistically, elevators may struggle to maintain enough space for everything. And so one of two things happens. Either basis widens to disincentivize bean movement into town, into the elevator, and put maybe in on-farm storage, or they end up robbing corn space to store more beans, and that ends up being a domino effect here eventually for a potentially big corn crop. So I think early on, if your beans are really good and you're not storing them on farm, I think trying to find the best home cash-wise, I agree with Ellen, selling them to generate cash is the right strategy. And I think that's what I would be recommending, especially as I highlighted here a little bit ago about the run up against 200-day moving average on the November contract. I think that's kind of a telltale sign. And with the lack of a demand program in the fall on the export side, it does have me concerned that eventually, if we do see the weather change in South America and yields continue to be as big as they've been early on, that we'll see some downward hedge pressure on the board and certainly wider potential basis where elevators start to get full on their allocated bean space.
Ellen, I want to come back to you very quickly. And Arlen, if you want to answer this question too, I would appreciate that. If there is a price later contract, for instance, that a farmer could take advantage of for beans that offers a premium if they make the cash sale for the later delivery, for instance, they can pick up 8 to 10 cents. Should they do that? So rather than saying, I'm going to price later, because the elevator wants to move it, clearly, or is going to try to move it, should they take advantage of that sort of function?
I've not seen a price later contract that offers a bonus to do that. And typically there's a charge to put one of those contracts on. So I've not been a proponent of price later contracts at all. I think the farmer ought to just be looking at selling if they really want to do really want to hold some bushels, make sure the bushels that you do hold get hedged off.
Yeah, I would add to that on the price later contracts. There may be times when it's advantageous to the farmer, but as a whole, what it does is it dumps a lot of bushels onto the market so that the end user, or in this case, the reseller, doesn't have to bid up basis in order to pull it out of your hands at a later date. So it increases the supply that they have. And so you lose some of that leverage as the farm group as a whole in being able to see higher prices. And that is one of my concerns, kind of like what Brian was hinting at earlier with South America, is we're looking at now the likelihood that rains are going to start in center west Brazil by the middle of next week or so, and it looks to be good rains overall. And so if that forecast continues to verify, as I talked to our people in Brazil on Tuesday about it, they said the farmers there are ready to go and plant aggressively, and we still expect 165 to 170 million metric ton crop this year versus the 149 or 150 this last year. And so they're very optimistic about beans. Corn is a little different story, but what that tells me, if you're hauling beans to town and you're either paying storage or doing a price later or something, and those rains do fall, you could end up losing a lot of storage and interest costs just waiting for the price to come back.
Well, I'll make a quick comment on that. I think what you're referencing is paying the DP price later charges and then selling what we call like an EXDP contract for a deferred price, say for January or February payment. And a lot of times you're basically selling the January, February bid versus selling it in the spot October bid, and you're paying the DP charges until that point in time where then your bushels are sold and take payment later. And a lot of times, I wouldn't say a lot of times, let me back up. Periodically, you may find that a elevator has a particular price later charge out to a certain delivery period, like January, February, my example, that does not cover the cash carry. And that's where that 8 cents you're referencing comes in, where they basically pay you 8 cents to do that. And my comment to growers is always factor in the interest on your money, right? So is that spread enough to cover the interest cost to what Arlen was saying, though, giving up the storage and interest by doing so? If it does, there's advantageous times to do that if you don't need cash flow. But if it doesn't, then certainly isn't something that I would personally recommend doing.
Yeah, so in this case, you're saying if you just sold it up front, you could capture the interest if you have it in an account, or if you're not paying interest on a loan somewhere else.
Correct, correct.
Okay, yep, correct. Now let's move on to some of the other topics. Arlen, you wanted to talk about the international front. Of course, we have a war in the Middle East that is raging at this point. You suggested that may certainly have an impact on fuel. We've seen that this week in the futures prices and on fertilizer. Can you tell me about how the two are related?
Yeah, certainly. If we look at urea exports, the 51% of the world's urea exports come from the Middle East and North Africa. And specifically, if we look back at last year's data, just shy of 9% of the urea came from Iran. So if this war does spread and shuts things down coming from Iran, then you're looking at a loss of urea onto the world market, which starts to tighten up the whole fertilizer market. And other countries in the Middle East are big suppliers as well. Phosphate and potash isn't directly an Iran issue, but it is other countries in the Middle East that supply potash and phosphate. And so depending on the scope that this war comes, you know, and what are the odds, probably less than 50% at this point, but it is continuing to escalate. So the longer it escalates, the greater the risk that we could start affecting either infrastructure for production or shipping. And probably shipping is the greatest risk right now going forward, being able to get produced product out of that region of the world.
Speaking of shipping, is there any concern related, Arlen, to the strike at the ports here in the United States?
Yeah, the strikes are affecting primarily containers. And so bulk grain is not impacted. However, specialty crops, non-GMO soybeans, for example, that are sold to China for specialty uses or other countries, et cetera, identity preserved, that has come to a halt if it's going through one of the East Coast or Gulf ports. Other commodities like coffee is dramatically impacted. A lot of our coffee comes to the East Coast. Cocoa is another one. When you look at meat, most of our meat exports go through the West Coast, but we do have some pork and poultry that goes down in the Caribbean area down through the Gulf that is impacted. And a lot of our trimmings and lean meat, basically cow meat that comes in and ends up at a hamburger, your local hamburger joint, comes in the East Coast. And we are starting to see those supplies tighten up. And that's a concern for the consumer. And that's one of the things kind of helping support our cattle market right now.
Interestingly enough, here in the United States, most consumers prefer white meat for poultry, and so there has to be a marketplace for the dark meat, and that runs through New Orleans and the ports headed into the Caribbean. I've heard from the other side that they don't like that very much if they're trying to produce poultry in those areas, because there's an awful lot of dark meat that comes out of the United States headed that direction. Ellen Dearden, since we're on the international side, you had suggested we should talk about the strength of the dollar. It has been going up. How much of a concern is that for the export market?
Well, it's a big concern, I think. We're certainly not advantageous, or we've been the low price commodity for corn into the export market, but the strength in this dollar certainly puts a bugaboo on that. And I think we've just got to watch this pretty carefully. The situation, too, where the EU this week came out and said that they were going to delay implementation of buying soy from countries that had deforestation as part of their program, really rock the meal market this week. You know, meal has, everybody's been worried about on the crush, how are we going to use meal? And all of a sudden that thing exploded to the upside over the last couple of weeks. And now it's just, you know, collapsed again with the EU situation. But I think the EU probably would not have made that delay, and it won't take effect now till December 25, wouldn't have done that had they had big crops in the EU this summer. That's just my opinion.
On that note, Arlen Suderman, let's do take up some of the areas that have had drought. You wanted to talk about it as it relates, I think, to Russian wheat, but there is drought in parts of Europe for wheat and other crops, particularly in the eastern part of Europe where corn is grown. What are your concerns there and what opportunities might exist?
Well, the drought certainly did hurt the winter wheat crop in Russia and much of Ukraine. And then excessive rains actually hurt their spring wheat crop in Russia. So overall, we're seeing a much smaller crop coming out of the Black Sea region. The Black Sea does set the world price, cash price for wheat. As long as they're selling it cheap, then that holds down the market in the rest of the world. And of course, we had much lower corn production coming out of that as well, which I think can help support our corn exports in the last half of this marketing year. Then you add to that Argentina reducing corn acreage in this coming crop by 20%+ will reduce what they produce this next year on top of dryness they're anticipated to have with La Nina. But with Russia and eastern Ukraine continue to be dry, which means they're planting their winter wheat crop in the dust right now. It's been extremely dry, one of the driest last 60-day periods that we've seen for that region, really over the last 60 days for the last four decades plus. And all of this could be quickly alleviated with one good rain, but so far that rain is not on the horizon. Their winters tend to be more harsh there. They need to get the crop established before it goes dormant. They're running out of time. If the rains don't come, then we anticipate that we will see Russia implement export restrictions. There are already calls on that. Export quotas are nothing new to Russia. They've been doing it for the past several years, but how tight might those restrictions be? That is what will focus the market on the fact that much of the rest, virtually all the other major exporting nations in wheat outside of the United States have tight supplies as a percent of use. And so overall, I think it gives us a bigger market reaction in wheat, and that tends to always support corn, along with the improving fundamentals I see for corn down the road, not near term, but down the road. So I think that overall could end up being one of the bright spots in an otherwise kind of dismal, discouraging market scenario.
They'll come back to you for some of those near-term consumption sides for corn or fundamentals. It could be production side as well. But Ellen Dearden, I do want to turn to you and to Brian Stark as it's related to marketing corn. Both of you clearly thinking that if soybeans are coming across the scale, that farmers really probably should move those bushels. What are you telling producers about corn that has to go across the scale?
I am much more hesitant to sell corn right off the scale, and I'm looking for all kinds of places to tuck it in. I know that there are farmers in West Central Illinois who will be looking at bagging corn. I don't know that we are going to go back to the old-fashioned, you know, clean out your machine shed and fill it full of corn, but I think anybody that can keep corn off the market for right now, it's going to be a good bet.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think, to Arlen's point, it's kind of all intertwined. I think I agree. The upside clearly lies with wheat and corn, the feed grains, and play more of a defensive posture with soybeans. So I think, obviously, I'm not a big proponent of paying DP charges at the elevators. So I think it goes back to my earlier comments about revenue. But I think if you can store as much corn on the farm and keep it away from the elevator this fall and stay long that cash product, I think that certainly has more upside today than, say, soybeans and trying to avoid robbing corn space on the farm by storing beans. I think that's multiple reasons. Obviously, looking out forward, when you think about the upside, and Arlen saying 6 months, you know, deferred down the road, I agree with that. It also means that I think we need to be more nimble and disciplined on thinking about what we're going to do into the spring of next year. I know I'm getting a little bit ahead with 24 crop, still a lot of it to be marketed, but I think we can't miss an opportunity to lose sight of if beans are the potential downside risk commodity, that we need to be looking at potentially defending some of our intentions to plant next spring with the November 25 contract. So I think right now today, to answer back to your original question, I'm a proponent of trying to stay long corn here for the immediate future.
And Arlen Suderman, your position with the corn market, and then tell me about those changing fundamentals for corn further out.
Yeah, and the corn, that's where we see the most opportunities for things to improve. And so if you're looking at your storage allocation, I would agree with what's been said versus soybeans. But when you look at the corn market, yes, we produced a big corn crop here, but it is a global market. I don't see us selling a lot to China, but I do think we're going to continue to see strong demand into Mexico. And when you look at growing less corn each year in the Black Sea region, which is our fourth largest exporting region, when you look at less corn coming out of Argentina, which is our third largest exporting region, when you look at the soybean crop being planted late in Brazil, that's more of a risk to their corn production. And so it doesn't guarantee a short crop, but it does significantly increase the risk of them having a shorter winter or safrinha corn crop. So I do think things are starting to line up for perhaps improving our exports as we get into the last half of the marketing year. And we've already seen a friendly stocks report that has given us a smaller beginning stocks number for this year, helping us out. So we're starting to work ourselves a little bit healthier there on the corn balance sheet.
Ellen Dearden, anything on the livestock side that you've been watching closely, whether it's the September Hogs and Pigs report or something with the cattle market?
The hogs and pigs report that came out last week really suggested that we're going to have ample supplies of pork in the spring and summer next year. And that says to me that we've got to be figuring in feeding more corn to those hogs. And I think that will continue. They will continue to outpace expectations on rebuilding the cattle herd in the calendar year 2025. Poultry numbers will come back as well, but I think feed use is going to pick up some. I did notice that this week we saw active vying for feeder supplies at markets, and that's always a good sign. But, you know, Kansas had a much better corn crop this year than they've had in the past, and Milo as well.
It's about more pigs per litter and heavier weights to market.
Oh, yeah. Right. Both.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. Brian Stark at the Andersons here in Mansfield, Illinois. Your final word.
I would just say and reiterate that I think farmers need to think about the revenue game. I think it's important when you look at above yield expectations that we don't get wrapped up into price forecasting and look at overall revenue to try and manage our risk. And I'll also say, please, as we get busier, remain safe out there working these longer hours.
Arlen Suderman with StoneX.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And it's baseball playoff time, so keeping that theme, the Kansas City Royals are into playoffs and have won their first round. We've had some good years when you could hit some home runs in marketing. We need to have a different mindset now. Singles and doubles. Get singles and doubles where we can, whether it be in grabbing some good bases, on taking advantage of some carry in the market, on hedging some of our costs or inputs like fuel costs, whatever it may be. Focus on being in defensive mode now to protect the equity we've built on the farms in these recent years. And the bad times tend to lead to good times, and we go through the cycle in ag, so I'll just focus on being defensive and moving forward, and those good times will come back.
Bring them across home plate one at a time. Ellen Dearden from Ag Review, your final word for the day.
The geopolitical risks are huge right now, and that's gathering a lot of headlines. You can't be, you know, looking at your little county and tell you that's everything that you should know about the markets. You need to look at a bigger focus. And I think we've had the opportunity to do that through Commodity Week and the regular WIL ag shows.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may hear it online anytime you'd like in its entirety at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Ellen Dearden, Brian Stark, and Arlen Suderman. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.